Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hi, I'm Paco Romaine.
And I'm George Chen, and you're listening to SubDoc, a show where we talk to our interesting friends from the worlds of comedy, writing, TV, and film about their favorite documentaries.
For today's episode, we sat down with legendary comedian and actor Wayne Fetterman. You may know Wayne from his numerous stand-up appearances and roles in Curb Your Enthusiasm, Community, Step Brothers, and serving as head monologue writer for Late Night with Jimmy Fallon.
Wayne chose to talk to us about Crumb, Terry Zweigoff's 1995 profile on the underground comics artist Robert Crumb and his dysfunctional family. Jeffrey Anderson from the San Francisco Examiner called it the greatest documentary ever made.
And now, here's our talk with Wayne. Wayne Fetterman's here with us, George.
In the house, and we've been listening to the Cheap Suit Serenades.
Yeah,
we've
been. Who are they, in case somebody doesn't know what they are?
That was Crumb's old-timey band, where he plays banjo, and I believe that's where him and Zweigoff got to know each other, was through playing music.
Yeah, I believe so. According to the director, didn't know that, but I read that. Mm-hmm. So that seems like he sat in with that band, and then...
What does Zweigoff play?
Like, oh, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Seems like he'd play some sort of weird flute-type thing, you know? Or a lute. Maybe a lute.
Okay.
Have either of you guys met Zweigoff?
No.
I have said hello to him because he's friends with Megan Keister, and he would come to Lost Weekend once in a while. And I was telling Wayne this. I remember Crumb being at a Cinecave show.
Whoa.
With Zweigoff.
Whoa.
And I remember it not being a particularly great show.
Uh-huh.
I remember it being particularly quiet.
Yeah, well, that would be hard to have.
Yeah.
Our Crumb.
Yeah.
Watching yeah. with his very critical eye.
It's very large glasses.
In the meantime, I did verify, that he was in Cheap Suit Serenade.
Yeah,
and he played cello and mandolin.
Oh, nice. See?
Nice. They got
a little luty.
Yeah.
Yeah,
little
so
looty.
It was... Because the album we were listening to is from 74,
yeah.
and that's...
He's not on that one, for sure, yeah. But, Crumb, all the illustrations on the back, I hadn't looked at those in a while.
Oh, right.
There was a super racist one
of course.
I forgot about.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, yeah, I totally
forgot.
You sure
it's racist or not just racial?
Racial. It's definitely racial.
Okay.
It's definitely
you.
Racial.
I like to make a distinction.
Let's like, make a distinction. if you were to take the sides of certain people in the documentary, like it's definitely about race, for sure.
Yeah. Before we bandy that word around,
let's set some guidelines.
As human beings?
Yeah.
Make a distinction.
Is it sexy or is it sexist?
There's
a distinction.
That's
there.
A big question in this also.
Yes, there is.
There's a lot of that.
Yeah.
Which is not the stuff I remember from watching this. And like, I think I watched this in the 90s.
Oh, you did?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Not in a theater,
in the
but
theater.
Maybe a rental. You saw it in a theater.
Yeah.
You saw it in a theater as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I remember leaving the theater. I saw an afternoon, a matinee in college. I remember leaving and it was bright blue skies. It was like May or something when I saw it. And I remember feeling so weird after watching this doc and it being a really nice day. And I did not know what to do with the rest of my day.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very emotional. It's such an incredible documentary.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be what, top? Let's just put it in the top 20.
It's got to be in the top 20,
yeah.
right?
I think so.
It was interesting because Morgan Spurlock has a list of the 50 documentaries you have to see before you die.
Right.
And I think it's at 15 or something.
Oh, good. I thought
but
for a second you were
unfortunately,
gonna say it wasn't.
Like Super Size Me is in the top 10.
Of course.
If you're going to make your own list.
You can't. You have to immediately
Morgan.
Excuse your movies.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, like, you know, top comedy albums of all time, you would, of course, include your comedy album.
I wouldn't.
There, right?
I wouldn't
either.
No way. It's, no way.
There's no way.
Because those are just albums compared to what I put out, which was just as epic. No.
You had lightning strike from God.
Yeah.
One of the haunting things about Crumb, the doc, is the soundtrack, which is awesome.
Yeah. Great soundtrack.
The soundtrack is amazing. And
speaking of Katy Perry.
Speaking of Katy Perry.
prenatal soundtrack.
I think she has the physique that Crumb probably would be into. No, I don't think. Not
she's not thick enough. Real thick in the,
okay.
She seems more like a
in the booty.
And in my opinion,
got
but,
it.
You know.
Yeah. You get to learn about his sexuality in this movie.
Oh, yes, boy.
It's pretty good.
Yes.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, he doesn't hide anything. He's not like someone who hides much. I find that fascinating that someone can... What's even... First, fascinating that someone can dig the depths of their psychosis or whatever and put it out like that. But also, what else is he? Does he have that he hasn't shared? That's like, you know, what I'm saying? Like,
well, I do think like music is a key. Obviously, music is a key to how Terry Zwigoff and Crumb got together,
right?
And music, it opens with him listening to like a 78. There's a lot of he seems really like a crazy record nerd too. Like he's like worried about. He's like, I'll kill him if they break my 78s on the way to France.
Yeah,
that's not the best.
No, not a great. That's not a great Crumb, but it was a good try.
Yeah,
like the opening shot's amazing because it shows him kind of like on the floor holding his knees and like you know like that's it sets the tone for kind of the entire film.
Yeah,
I thought the opening shot was like.
All the little figurines.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it does that. It does the panning shot.
Yeah, the end of the credits is him.
Okay. Yeah. Like
you definitely see like a ceramic huge ass in the beginning.
Yeah.
That's what you initially see.
And that also sets the scene for the doc.
It definitely does. Yeah.
It's such a great, it's such a smartly made documentary. And one of the things I noticed.
It's lucky. It's just lucky that he picked that guy.
Right.
And that he was allowed that access.
Yeah.
Before we get into it.
Yeah.
Can we talk about. The main thing about Crumb, if you haven't seen it, it's about Crumb, not called R. Crumb,
right.
Because he wanted it to be more about that family.
Oh, Zwigoff?
Yeah.
I just realized that watching it today. Yeah. I'm like, oh, there's a reason it was never called R. Crumb, because it's so much about
I never thought
dynamic.
About that, but you're right. Yeah, he centers on Charles and Maxon.
Yeah.
And
but
R.
here's the thing that I'm, of course, most curious about. Those two sisters, where are they?
Yeah. Exactly.
Who do they live? Do you guys think about them?
Of course.
Why wouldn't they participate?
I think it's pretty obvious why they wouldn't participate,
why?
Don't you think? Because they probably think their brothers are creepy and weird, and maybe they're normal. I think that's why it is.
I think that there's a lot of implied abuse and neglect and a combination thereof.
Of what happened in that house?
Yeah. So seeing how everyone... Seeing as Robert Crumb... is the most normal of the brothers.
Yes.
That leaves a lot of room for outliers, I guess. But I did see that one of the sisters ended up marrying a writer who she had met through Robert. It's implied that... Wikipedia says this. She married a guy who was friends with R. Crumb.
Mm.
So...
So, of course, that was my first thing. Like, why aren't these two talking?
Right,
and will they ever talk? And, like...
Where are they?
What
are they? And they must be...
Because that family is very, as literally crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he calls his brother Looney.
Yeah.
And the, you know... like, they're smart.
They're super very smart.
Am I right about that? That was one of the myriad of takeaways I got, the one why I love this. Would you agree that they're smart?
Yes.
Some might say geniuses.
Even the mom. You would say genius.
Yeah.
Da-ding, da-ding, da-ding.
Oh, yeah, two. Number two.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they are extreme. I mean, kind of, you know, savantish, you know, like...
For sure.
Like, spectrum, a little bit on the spectrum.
Oh,
you know,
super on a spectrum.
Yeah.
Is that the autism spectrum?
Right, yes.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, they seem, but like, that's, I feel, oh man, there's so much...
I know, this is what, if you're going to ask me why I picked this movie...
Yes, why did you pick this?
Well, because you'd already done Wiener, and that's the one I really wanted to do. It's because I... unlike most documentaries, which is usually about one thing and like some little, this is about genius.
Three, ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. Commerce,
right.
Luck,
right.
Father, son stuff.
Tons.
Brother, sibling rivalry stuff.
Tons.
Mom stuff.
Tons.
Drug abuse.
Tons.
Drug usage. LSD.
Yeah.
Is a big part of this.
Right.
This, you know, the moms on amphetamines. The, and culture and
American
fame.
Pop.
Fame.
Yeah.
Fame is a big part of this.
Yeah.
Like, you think that's crazy that he became. Super famous, you know, and then his just, and also, I just love, there's a scene with him and his son where they're just talking about Justin, is that his name?
I think it's Jesse.
Jesse. Where they're just talking like shop about
drawing.
Like work, literally work.
Father, son,
No, but I'm saying, like, when you break down Crumb, he does a lot of work.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you never think of it. You just think, oh, it's like, oh, work. I'm actually doing this.
Right.
I'm creating this. And so it has any, and they explore all of those themes and more. Am I missing any?
Mental health, I guess.
Yes, mental health. Yeah. The difference between... I'm not going to use the word gene, but brilliance.
Well,
because I don't want to say it again. And craziness, like that line.
That line, yeah.
That's true. We all know that the way his brothers end up, he could have ended up like that easily, right?
Do you feel like LSD saved him? That's kind of the implication.
I do. I feel like he basically says
re-triggered his brain to not be like his brothers.
Right.
And it also led to his style and like this... The evolution of his drawing style.
Yeah. Well, I think it also helps to
That's a great point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it
helps. LSD saved R. Crumb.
It certainly helped.
Okay, we're done this podcast. Yeah. Guys,
good night, everybody. This was fun. Let's talk about Tickled. No, but I think also when you grow up not having any confidence like the Crumb brothers and not feeling special, when all of a sudden you're tapped on the shoulder by people and saying, you're special, like people thought Robert Crumb was special when he was still in his 20s. Mm-hmm. I think that helps a lot to like...
Wait, when he was doing the American greeting card
stuff?
Or like
Big Brother and Holding Company.
Well, like the Zap comics and, you know, like...
I think that was a little late.
He could have, like, maybe early 30s.
I'm not sure exactly what the time... I see what you're saying.
But when people say to you, like, you have something special, and obviously his brothers didn't get that, you know, from the greater public.
Why? But his brother Maxon certainly... That could have been a style of painting that people went nuts for.
Yeah. They're certainly talented. Charles seems like a genius himself.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, four.
Genius. Actually, one thing I did do some follow-up. Max now sells his paintings.
Of course.
There's a pre... like it's kind of like pre-orders. Like there are people that are just ready to buy anything he's going to put out.
Well, that's cool.
No question.
And he's
based on this documentary.
From that. Right. Yeah. Based on this. Yeah, exactly.
So this documentary, in the way that LSD saved Robert... This documentary.
Commerce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could, I would argue, yeah.
I remember seeing Maxon on the streets, on Market Street in San Francisco when I first moved there. Mm-hmm. He would be doing the nails thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, sitting on the bed of nails and just
I mean,
chilling.
The way we talk about it, just like, you know, just a guy sitting on a bed of nails.
Yeah.
And he's Crumb's brother.
Yeah. And he's swallowing a ribbon through his intestines.
Yes.
It takes 3 days. How does that actually work?
I don't know.
I've never heard of anyone.
It also
doing
looked
that.
Like shoestring. Like it looked like.
It took me a while the first time I saw it to even comprehend. I thought it was just like nervously chewing on it. Like, and then I was like, through.
And he uses the same one over and over again. That's what maybe he gets a new one. I hope he at least gets a new one.
I'm going to describe this, but do it for you guys and you describe it.
Okay.
Is there any point where this happens?
He's doing like a floss, human centipede style flossing. That's what someone else said. I don't think you could do it. I don't think you could do it.
You can't do too many twists and turns.
You would just rip through a piece of even a ribbon would like rip through your guts.
It seems refreshing though. It does seem refreshing.
At the end of that process.
What would you call that? That's some sort of flossing for sure.
I feel like floss is not the right word.
No,
it's like pipe cleaning.
I
feel like there's a better descriptor of that.
Yeah, it's certainly not.
But it takes 3 days to get through, and then I guess you just... Anyway.
Then it just hooks on one of those nails, and you just slowly walk away from it.
And just pull it out.
But he's still... As far as the internet says, Max is still alive.
Mm.
Still in San Francisco, selling his paintings.
Did you notice
still living kind of like where... He's working on these paintings that are worth a couple thousand dollars, but he still has like a leaky roof. And he's like, oh no, water's getting on this painting. Like, it's just intense.
But that could be just his own spectrum-y life.
Yeah.
He's holding up like an SRO somewhere in the Tenderloin.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
Single residence occupancy.
You pay by the week.
Yeah, weekly.
Okay, because was there a RSO Records?
Oh, yes. There was an RSO Records.
I'm not looking at my computer.
No,
I'm
me neither.
Role, so
but I do
feel like there's a 1970s era disco records were put out by Robert Stigwood. I think that's right.
Yeah.
That's in Looking Away, yeah. Analog Brainworks. Oh,
wow.
So SRO means single residence
occupancy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
RSO is a disco label.
Right. Yeah. Sames.
Well, I remember one scene where Max and Robert are walking down the street, and I realized that's the Mission Theater. It's where Alamo Draft House is.
Right, now, right.
Because I saw that sign.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was a Mission. Then a lot of it was Market Street. I think right. He ended up in the Tenderloin at some point.
Yeah, it looks like the Tenderloin when he's visiting. When he's
in this is all San Francisco talk for those people who are not familiar with.
Don't care.
He was also in the
415 and don't know what's going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of hate street in there, too.
Yeah, well, they're in that one particular scene when they're in the diner and the guy's feeding his pet rat.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
He's feeding him lettuce
that's
and water.
Hate. That's what I recall the hate.
Nothing's changed of the hate since that was filmed in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's also about counterculture.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
60s, and like he's in the middle of it all, but he hates it. He hates the music.
Yeah.
He gets advice from Janis Joplin on how to meet girls, grow his hair out, and unbutton his shirt.
Wear bell bottoms.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my
God. I like when people hear, they're like, everyone thought I hung out with the dead. I hate the dead.
Yeah.
He's like, it's
so, what comes out of this guy's mouth is so worth the $2.99 iTunes rental or whatever.
Definitely, yeah.
It's like we said, one of the best documentaries ever made. And he's got like integrity. That's the thing too. Like at one point he says that SNL wanted to offer him money.
Was it SNL that wanted?
He said SNL, and then he said the Rolling Stones wanted him to do an album cover. And one of the talking heads said that he was offered like $100,000 just to begin with, and he said no.
Yeah, that's like nuts.
So, I mean, is that smart or is that dumb?
I don't know. I don't know. But I don't know how he made all his money.
Right.
Like, was it from those comic books? Did he just sell?
I think back in the day, they sold really well, and you could actually make a living from doing some of that stuff.
Oh, yeah. There's like a...
Jesus.
I don't know. Lawn keeping. I think we're fine.
It's probably okay.
We can handle it.
We can handle that. We're comedians. It's like being heckled. We're fine.
But I mean, obviously, there's a jaw dropping of the many jaw dropping moments in this movie.
Yeah.
Of a throwaway line that he trades a small box of discarded ideas, not even full. Just things that he writes.
Yeah.
Sketches. Just a small box of discarded So they worked on half finished.
Right.
What is he traded for?
A house in France. Yeah.
In the south of France.
That's nuts.
I was thinking he was tearing out a drawing he would make of a girl and just give it to the girl. I'm like, I hope that girl kept that because that's definitely worth a shit ton of money. Right.
Absolutely.
Now,
yeah, he talks about drawing people when he's in that cafeteria or the diner in the hate. He's like, this girl liked it and I just gave it to her. It's like, damn. But then there's the moment where the guy at the comic book store asks him for a
autograph
and he's just like, no.
Yeah.
He's so...
I don't want to do it. Yeah.
Is that what he said? I think he said the way he said it, he says, I don't think that's gonna happen. The way he said it was so interesting.
Yeah, he looked very it was painful for him.
It did look painful for him.
Yeah,
a lot of things. Actually, one thing I
noticed, he was friendly to the guy. He was friendly to that kid.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard. You know, again, this is. I'm sure you talk about this a lot in your documentary 51, going on 55.
Yeah.
how much the camera changes the reality of it. And even though he does, especially with that ex-girlfriend of his, he almost comes off a little sadistic with her.
Yeah.
Like he kind of
in the arc
grabs her and gets up in her face.
And she just wants to know, why were you so mean to me? And why did you act like that?
Why were you? And he would just start laughing.
Yeah.
As I say, he laughs all the time.
Yes,
his response to everything, stuff that we're just our jaws are dropping.
Yeah.
And
well, his brothers, I mean.
Mom, they all do that. They all have that.
Mm-hmm. He's like, you drank a bottle of shoe polish. And they all just laugh.
They're all giggling.
Yeah. It's their way of, it's like a defense mechanism. It's a way to project, off of them.
So that Just that alone is fascinating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let alone all of these other things we're talking about.
And then you never expect... I keep forgetting that the mom shows up. You know, she's just an off-camera voice for a while.
Yeah.
Which is oh, it's just so great to see Charles's face.
Right.
When his mom yells at him from the stairwell when he's on camera, because you can see he's just like, oh, just like, leave me alone. But he lives with he's 50 and living with his mom, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess he never left.
For 30 years, right? They say that he was 30 years.
And almost never left. And I think so. This is that time period of documentaries where they would not give you time and place kind of stuff, because now it would be like Philadelphia, June 2016. Right. But they didn't do that in this doc, so it's hard to tell. I think that house is in Philadelphia.
I believe so. Yeah,
right?
That sounds right. Because he was going to go do that lecture in the beginning where he was showing
the slides.
So I think that's like a trip they're visiting. He's like, and that phone call he's making is a mom, like, yeah, you know, is Charles doesn't want to be on camera? Okay, whatever. And then eventually, I guess, the crew shows up and he probably can.
But how often in life, I mean, let me get back. I'll get back to the house in a sec. You're like a teenager. You can't get girls. All the like jockey guys get the girls you want.
Scutch.
And then just.
That's scutch.
And then it's like, I'll show them. And he shows them. How often is that?
No,
never.
That is never.
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 You end
happens.
Up working in a comic book store.
Yes.
Like it's like.
Asking famous comic book guys for their autograph.
It was just like that happened.
That he even had that many ex-girlfriends was shocking in a way.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
Like comics groupies or something.
Well, he said.
Well, that girl was like, you lied to me and I saw you with isn't that what happened?
With the woman that ended up being his wife? No?
Well, I don't think, she just said like he was supposed to be 200 miles away and then she saw him with another woman.
Yeah.
So like, but it sounded like he could get them because of his fame and notoriety, but he probably didn't know what to do with them once he got them. Like catching the big fish, you're like, ugh.
Well, the blonde woman who's the editor of Jugs, like what she says about him is so interesting. She just like basically psychoanalyzes him. He's like, breast men are aggressive.
Yeah.
Butt men are like submissive.
Right.
Like it's about the mother. And so it's like a very Freudian kind of look at it. Which, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of implied, weird, maybe incestuous stuff, maybe abuse stuff in the family. It's like, you never see. Well, the dad died in 82, so he never makes it. I feel like he wouldn't have done the interview anyway. If the dad was still around, no way he would have done that interview.
I can't possibly see Mr. Crumb.
Like when they're creating all their comics and stuff, that actually reminded me of like the Wolfpack, if you've seen that.
I have seen the Wolfpack.
The brothers having to create their own weird universe.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they obviously, they were like a pact. You know, they were a pack and they were like, hey, let's get out of this alive if we can. And
yeah, I definitely feel like Charles and Max did not talk because all the information was being passed through Robert.
Yeah, you never see the two of them together.
And it seemed like Max had a lot of resentment towards the mother as well.
Well, okay, was Max the youngest? Like, I don't even know
the youngest
order.
Of the boys, I believe.
Of the boys.
Yeah, it seems like Charles was oldest.
Obviously, Charles was the oldest.
Yeah.
That's a given.
Clearly.
I'm talking about the other two.
Yeah, Max is younger than Robert. We don't know where the sisters fall into the scheme.
Yeah.
Because we didn't get into that too much.
But he mentions like Charles was the CEO. Mm-hmm. The sisters were the secretaries or whatever.
Right. It's so fascinating.
Robert Crumb was the treasurer, and then Max was the supply guy.
Yeah.
Like he had to go get supplies.
And he remembered that.
Yeah.
Did they say what the dad did or anything?
Yeah. Well, he wrote that book about sales.
Oh, he's a sales guy.
Yeah.
He was a sales guy.
Yeah.
That's sociopathy though, right? Sales. Like a lot of that's like just like manipulating people.
Sure. Yeah. And he's post World War II. He was a World War II vet.
Right.
Yeah.
Greatest Generation.
Yeah. And that picture they show where he talks about the permanent smile and how it's a sign of depression.
Oh man.
You know, like the Japanese businessmen have the permanent smile kind of thing, and they show that picture and his eyes are just like dead. And he's got this weird ass smile on his face. It's like, ugh, he looks like a disciplinarian.
Yeah, there's another. I mean, that's another issue that I didn't bring up in my preamble of just like that, you know, 50s America and
right.
Like, he rejected it so much. But if you look at 50s America through the eyes of somebody who grew up in the Depression, it's like heaven.
Yeah.
And he thought it was hell. Like,
right.
How quickly that would change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, they get into it a little bit about the sitcom, or I mean, of the like 50s.
Right.
You know, the 50s nuclear family and how everything's pleasant.
Right,
and
right, on the surface. Everything's surface.
And then there's these weird undercurrents, and he draws the cartoon about the family where the mom comes out in S&M gear.
Straight up the aristocrats, yeah. Just like all like weird incest stuff.
Charles is the one that started this whole comic thing in the family. He was completely obsessed with comics when we were kids and had absolutely no other normal kid interest. He wasn't interested in toys or games. He didn't play sports. He didn't do anything but read comics, draw comics, think comics, and talk them. And I mean, I like drawing, but I had other drawing interests besides comics, like to draw realistic scenes and, you know, just pictures of buildings and cars and stuff. He wasn't interested in that at all. It was only the comics.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, listeners, are you looking for a new source of documentaries? I know I am.
Well, guess what? There's an app for that. It's called GuideDoc.
Discover and watch the world's best hand-picked and award-winning docs from around the globe. A new must-see documentary each day.
Here's a doc I just found called Skatistan. It's about a nonprofit organization bringing skateboarding to kids in war-torn Kabul.
You can sign up through the app in the iTunes App Store and stream all GuideDoc movies for one low monthly subscription of just $4.99.
Go to GuideDoc.tv/supdoc and enter your email address for a chance to get a free month of GuideDoc.
And now, back to SupDoc.
So, Wayne, if you were to pitch this to somebody who hadn't seen it, how would you describe Crumb?
Kind of the way I did earlier. I would say it's at its core just a documentary about a famous cartoonist, a cartoonist in the counterculture who became wildly famous, but then expands into areas that you are
not
would have no idea going into the movie and are revelatory in ways that are staggering.
Yeah.
That's the way I would describe it.
Crumb. That would make me want to watch it.
Would it? Is that? I don't think I'm overselling it.
No, I mean, I think you're underselling it in a long time. Yeah.
I know, it sounds weird. Like, just a movie.
Yeah, it is a lot of
And I like that
it's
shot
time.
On film.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it has a very, it's just.
The colors are great in it, yeah.
Even the titles, I realize. Yes. Like, oh, the titles are so old-time. I mean, he's so obsessed with old-timiness. He is obsessed
so
with not
era?
Fitting into.
Yeah, what, like his outfit, what era do you think that is?
20s? Like with the straw hat and everything?
I mean, he's obsessed with like 78s and like that era of music. So I think, 20s, 30s maybe. He doesn't seem to fit in. He seems to be very anti, obviously, like yuppies.
Right, because
like
he talked a lot about he hated culture. That there was any advertisement, Adidas thing, names of football teams. He hated, like, these are don't you realize you're now just. And it's so second nature to everyone now that you're just part of this capitalistic.
Yeah.
Well, that reminds me. Yeah. That scene where it shows like.
So there's that in it as well. Yeah. Capitalism.
Yeah.
There's that scene where it just.
And he's a beneficiary of capitalism.
Of course.
Sorry to yell, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
This is why I love this movie.
Yeah.
It's so there's. It's unlike most documentaries.
It's an onion.
I mean, even him going to southern France, he's already pretty remote. He's like living in Winters, which is like, I guess, above like Sacramento.
Yeah, it's near Sacramento.
And it seems pretty isolated and pretty, there's no internet back then. He seems pretty removed from things.
But he still
has to go to France.
But even I felt like the couple didn't even have the self-awareness of like, oh, look at these houses that are rebuilt. Like, well, your house was built and ruined somebody else's view. Yeah. No reflection of that.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, we hate this kind of progress. Stay away from our house.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's reactionary for sure.
He is. A reactionary. I don't think he has much personal reflection, R. Crumb. It doesn't seem like it. I don't think he's the kind of guy that sits around and goes, how could I better myself?
Do you think he knew how like charming he was? Like, because he is kind of very, in his
weirdness,
honesty, his absolute honesty.
I don't think so. He doesn't seem self-reflective to me. I don't think he thinks about those things. I think he's kind of, seems like the kind of guy that's day-to-day, you know? Like, how he can take things day-to-day.
Okay, I have a crazy postscript about this. There's a part, not to give away too much, but the older brother, Charles, basically goes crazy, was a comic strip, and started writing... To me, the most unsettling part of the movie is you see this comic book that he writes, and it's pictures and dialogue, and then slowly the pictures, how would you describe it? The pictures
shrink, and the dialogue starts to fill all the boxes until it's just nothing but dialogue. And then
page after page of just dialogue, no pictures.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then what happens then? And then the
dialogue starts to just become
squiggly lines.
Crazy squiggles that he can't even tell if they're upside down. But they have the shape. They have the spaces
of words. Yeah.
But there's no words. He's not using letters, right?
He can't even read it
page
himself.
After page.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pages.
That's a descent into madness. I mean,
I know, it's a descent. Yeah, as he called him, became more loony. Is the word he used to describe his brother.
And his characters got squiggly, like he started using the squiggly.
Oh, the ribbon, or like the folding effect.
Which I
loved his drawings. His drawings are great.
Oh yeah,
like what are you talking about?
Charles. Like when Charles does. Okay, so then there's that big scene, which was like the cartoon test. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
That was a great scene.
I forgot about that.
Where like he basically like kind of breaks the rules of the test, but clearly is like very talented. But it's like the guy just can't even like doesn't know what to do with him. And I think a lot of people would see that now and be like, oh yeah, well like that's what alternative comics should have been doing, is like breaking all these barriers.
Yeah.
But it just even. Robert is just like, that was an indication that he was like losing it.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows how to play within he knows how to color within the lines to a degree, even though he's like pushing it. He's pushing the content. He's definitely pushing like racial, sexual buttons all the time, all over the place.
Yeah.
So, he's just like him as a, Robert as a cartoonist is very like id. And then I feel like Charles, like if he had kept going, could have, that's the thing about it when we're talking about like where these guys went. Like clearly they all have artistic talent. The brothers all
do. No question. Yeah.
Maybe the sisters did too. Maybe
probably.
It never got expressed in that way, you know?
But also.
Yeah, so this is about talent. And can it be inherited? I mean, it seems like it can be.
Well, right, Robert's.
The generations, right. His kids, both his son and daughter.
Wait, but here's the thing, my little postscript I wanted to say. And someone's trying to break into the house.
Should have fired him. Should have fired these guys.
That I read an interview years ago with Zweigoff, the guy who directed it, and just about the movie. And he said that Sophie, the daughter, started drawing using the squiggly lines that his uncle did.
Oh.
You're kidding me.
No, I am not kidding.
Without any prompt? Like that was her style?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if she saw the
thing. Might have seen this.
I don't know.
But still.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I don't want to say the word red flag.
Right.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so when I read that, I was like, what's that?
That's odd.
So that even brings up, but then I heard that she has a kid now. So
she has a kid.
So maybe she didn't descend into
what? Oh, like she didn't, like it was, may have just been a weird trait that, like, yeah,
who knows?
Talent.
Who knows? Or something.
Both
in their
brains. Mom's, his husband, his wife is also a comics artist. Her mom, so both her parents, comics people. But yeah, that particular style coming back in, that would just chill me if I saw my kid.
Chilled me
that.
When I read it.
Yeah.
I was like,
that's
so nuts.
Wild. Yeah. Did you guys ever see Fritz the Cat?
The cartoon version, like the animated version? I feel like I've seen clips of it. Was it Ralph Bakshi?
Ralph
Bakshi? Bakshi,
No, I mean, I saw parts of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got a great soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Ralph.
What, doesn't it have Sing 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 in it? No, I'm thinking about another one. I'm thinking about that other cartoon.
That he did as well.
Splendor?
No, not Splendor. American something. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I know what you're talking
pretty
about.
Pretty good.
Not checking notes.
We're not looking.
We're living it out. You can.
I like this.
You do?
I like this rule.
I met a dude. Because
there's somebody right now screaming at their iPhone.
Because they know it. Yeah.
I met a guy. I mean, this is just another tangent. Yeah. But I met a guy who had, he's a Pixar guy. He'd worked on a lot of the Pixar stuff, like Cars and stuff. And he said he had gotten his start working for Ralph Bakshi on that Cool World movie with Brad Pitt. Oh. Yeah.
Oh.
It's like maybe the last major studio Ralph Bakshi movie.
Interesting.
And just like how they basically like got a budget and promised they could deliver this thing and then just had to work like maniacs to rotoscope all these characters, you know?
Yeah.
I think this might have been like 90 or something. So, yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
And he had some funny Ralph Bakshi stories, which I cannot remember all of them, but just a random connection.
Yeah,
he seemed I'm sure he would have. I'm sure Crumb hated this. He hated the movie.
Yeah.
I'm sure he hated the soundtrack because he didn't seem to like any.
What was on the soundtrack? Did you remember?
It was just very. It was like had a jazz, very funky jazz.
Can you give
soundtrack.
Me one artist or song?
I don't remember.
A lot of wah wah.
I remember that it was a really hard to find album. I remember looking for my brother. One of my older brother's friends had the soundtrack, and I loved listening to it because it was very jazzy. It had like jazz organ, and you know, and I remember trying to find it, and I could never find it.
Do you guys remember seeing that Keep on Trucking thing everywhere?
Oh, yeah. That was very big when
yeah.
I was alive in the 70s. Like, it was a thing.
Mm-hmm. Where were the... Oh, Jesus.
Mr. Natural.
Yeah, Mr. Natural. But there was the brothers, the...
The Furry Freak Brothers?
Yeah, the Furry Freak Brothers.
That's not him, right?
It always reminded me of that.
I think they're like... I think that's a British one, maybe. Yeah.
You know, it's awesome. Also odd is how much people bit off of Crumb.
Maybe it was the Keep on Trucking. Maybe it was those t-shirts. Because they did sell a lot.
Yeah.
Like, that's what... That would be interesting.
Yeah.
And that was LSD... inspired, right? That he said that he started seeing things in different perspectives.
I think he's like the feet and the legs started growing.
Yeah.
That's part of it. And that's when I think of him, I do think like everything of his is like the feet and the legs are kind of very prominent. He definitely has a fetish, yeah.
No
yes,
question.
There's no Bucks question about what he's into.
I mean, when was the last time you jumped on a girl's back for piggyback ride?
It's been a while.
It's something like he did immediately. Like, I think I saw him do it twice in the movie.
Yeah.
I know, definitely once.
Yes.
And he draws it too.
Yeah, and he draws it. I was like,
he's like into Amazon. So what's that that show he's watched as a kid, that like jungle woman?
Oh, Sheena of the Jungle.
He's really obsessed with that.
The blonde girl that's from the jungle.
That's another thing about like how these images
fetishes
as a kid, like how early they start.
He was turned down by Bugs Bunny. He kept a Bugs Bunny cartoon in his pocket.
I completely forgotten the thing about Charles and his crush.
Yeah.
On the
Treasure Island.
Treasure Island.
Yeah.
Little boy.
Yeah.
That had to be part of what drove him nuts. Like, just.
Do you think there was a homosexuality?
Like, like a homoerotic, like maybe some self hatred around that, too.
And just I'd
imagine.
I'm not even going to. I don't want to go out in the world.
No.
Knowing what I know about me.
Well, he.
Or like, is his alpha male dad, you know?
I don't know. The weird thing was, I felt like the dad, and again, I'm gleaning this only from the movie, was very hard on Charles.
Yes.
And I think because Charles, if you look at pictures of him, looked like a robust young man, as opposed to the other ones that looked like skinny little nerd kids.
Right.
So I was like, there's even a picture of him. He's got a great head of hair. And
he
looks like
he's handsome.
A handsome dude. And I think the dad was like, okay, this is going to be...
Here's our football player.
Yeah, here's our guy.
And then
maybe he's like, he's gay.
Or just,
I don't know.
His scutch experience seemed to be the major scarring thing that has kind of like... Was a thing that happened to him, but that Robert completely
absorbed.
Took him to himself. Yeah. This experience with his bully pushing his brother down. And he must have like really looked up to his brother too.
Of course.
Because his brother was the one that started the comics thing.
Right.
That's the other thing.
That's what he says.
Yeah.
He said the whole thing comes from Charles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Charles was the brain behind the operation. And
what did Charles play in that, in the organization? In their,
he was the CEO.
He was the CEO.
He was the president.
Okay, so that says something.
All the orders came from, from Charles.
And their dad was a salesman, so that makes all sense. Yeah.
But the Scutch thing is, and I think he even mentions that Charles has never had sex before.
Yeah, he does say that.
40-year-old virgin.
So I think that might be a sit, but I don't know. I just thinking about like the dynamic of that family, and what they
clearly all super intelligent, but in a way
like
where
how though it seems like they're all like high school. They all just went to high school,
right? They're very literate, I would say.
Well, yeah, right. Because Charles kept reading these books over and over again. And he's like, "Oh, I might read Hegel."
Yeah,
like I went to college. I've never read Hegel.
Yeah, he's talking about Kant and Hegel.
Yeah.
And what I found, as far as production wise, this is some interesting stuff. So it's filmed over 6 years.
Okay,
and
I thought it was longer than that.
The research I found was filmed over over 6 years. So it could be 7.
Started in 85.
Could have started. Yeah.
Because that last. When he's moving to France, the notebook says 90, which I was like, oh shit, I thought this came out in 94. I remember.
Oh, so
it might have taken 3 years to edit
and
like get the backing and everything.
Yeah. I think it was officially released in 95.
Mm-hmm.
But it hit the circuit in 94.
In 94, maybe
like festivals.
But
then
David Lynch was a producer.
I did not remember that either.
Yeah.
That was memorable, yeah.
I think that's pretty interesting. It kind of makes sense when you see it. Mm-hmm. You're like, I could see that happening.
Yeah.
And I guess Terry Zwigoff also asked one of the Monty Python guys for some help. Budgetarily. Mm-hmm.
Well, supposedly Zwigoff was super poor. I mean, that's the quote I keep reading, that he was like, lived on like $20 a month for a number of these years he was making this movie. And I don't even know how he got the film stock. I mean, I would really, I'd like to know a little more.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A little like how he got those cameras and a crew and the sound guys and all of that.
Right.
Because, I mean, they described the crew coming into that house in Philadelphia.
Right.
And... You know, and the mom doesn't want to be part of it, and then by the end...
Did you think, like, maybe it was that they don't ever open those windows? Because you notice there was, like, stuff, like, there was, like,
100%,
comforters over the windows. Yeah. Uh-huh. And, like, so, like, the last scene is you see Charles being like, I'm putting it down, mother. You know?
Because they needed the light for those...
They were, like, hoarders. Yeah. Oh, man.
It's insane. He lost his teeth, and, like...
Oh, my gosh.
And the mom's like, you got to put them in and get used to them.
For your self-pride.
Yeah.
There's no pride without a relation to other people.
One of my
and in a weird way, that's true.
It is.
There's no shame either. Then no shame, no pride. Yeah.
In a way, either it's side. True. He was like he was very elevated what that guy was saying. And can I also just double back to another area that gets explored is high school.
Oh right.
Like
how the horrible
pecking order.
The pecking order of high school, and especially because he seems like he wrote a lot about. Why are always the biggest jerk alpha dudes women? And then he's like, oh, women don't want you to be sensitive.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, like... He finally figured it out. Yeah.
He's like an MRA back in the day. He's like a men's rights activist.
They don't want the art sensitive, quiet, artistic types.
I thought they would be like, they'd like me if I draw it. Like, No.
Well, also,
God,
like, that's
devastating.
I feel like that's going to be a theme. That's going to be a theme in comics because that's a lot of people that end up doing comics.
Oh, of course.
Or, like, just, like, if you're going to talk about, like, whatever, like, misogyny or, like, that kind of stuff in comics, it's just by default, like, those were the guys that, like, they ended up drawing because they're unpopular. Or, like, there's a cause and effect somewhere in there.
Yeah.
So you just end up with this loop.
Sorry to bring that up. It was just, again... This is why I adore this. This might be my favorite documentary.
There's so much detail.
This might be my favorite of all the documentaries.
Did you happen to get a chance to see that Siskel and Ebert review?
Yes, I did.
It was incredible.
Do you want to explain it to me? Because I didn't watch it.
Well,
go ahead.
Siskel and Ebert are facing the camera doing their classic
94,
reviews.
95.
Yeah, it's right when this came out. And they basically gush over this documentary. I've never seen them both agree to this extent on any film, let alone an independent documentary.
Right.
And they're just basically saying it's the... I mean, Gene Siskel called it the best movie of the year at that point.
Mm-hmm. Right, but that was early in, I guess, 95 is going to be my guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Also, we just the three brothers, me and Charles and Max, and hung around together a lot. We used to rummage around this dump sometimes. looking for stuff. One time my brother Charles brought this thing back from the dump. It was this beautiful wooden truck. It's like an ice cream truck made out of wood. I wanted that thing really bad, and he wouldn't let me touch it or anything. He's real spiteful that way. So I made a big fuss, and I told my mother, and she said, Charles, let him play with that when you're through with it. And he said, okay. And so about 15 minutes later, he came in the house and said, okay, Robert, I'm through with it. You can play with it now. So I ran outside, and he had smashed it to smithereens against the wall of the house.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
We care about the Oscars that much? We were talking about the documentary category this year and how it was a little bit whacked. Like,
well, I think that Wiener was left off was like a huge.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, and we were talking earlier. I think it's political. I think it's just like because it's tied to Hillary right. and Luz, and I think they were just like, yeah.
Too painful.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So, like, yeah.
But OJ's on it.
OJ 13. Yeah.
That's gonna win. OJ's gonna win.
Oh, the James Baldwin.
Feel like James Baldwin has.
I'm gonna
a thing.
Try and what we're gonna maybe go see that tonight.
Oh, cool.
Tomorrow.
Oh, I heard it's just.
I've heard
beautiful.
Amazing things.
Oh, really?
I heard it's beautiful on every level. Yeah.
Huh.
But it's going to, again, I can't believe it's going to be like Crumb, though.
No.
Like Baldwin is going to be about this super literate
right.
dude who is just like, guys, you got to be kidding with right. me, Jim Crow already. Mm-hmm. Like
get out of here with your Jim Crow
already. Yeah. Like, you know, yeah. Just, you know.
Baldwin didn't think women were just legs and pussies, I don't think. I don't think he would draw that.
I don't know. I haven't seen it.
I thought he was gay. So I haven't seen it. Probably not.
Yeah.
Oh God! Like the one of those drawings that Crumb does, where the just gets more and more abstracted until it's just like legs and a
vagina.
Yeah. So
that's
so intense.
Oh, our
it's
Crumb.
Disturbing.
It is, but
it's disturbing.
Like I hold back in my stand-up.
And funny.
Yeah.
Like those little things he writes. Oh in there yeah. Are really funny.
They're super funny. Yeah.
Or like even like the there's stuff. There's stuff like when we're talking about the racism versus racial thing, it's just like a different generation will have different standards of
sure.
Because he's talking about like how Max used to assault Oriental women. So
right.
I'm like, you know, I was like probably 90 and these guys are old. I'd let that slide, but someone else might not, you know.
Oh,
so that's something, I guess that's something to think about when if you've never seen this before. And someone who's a little bit like it's super not woke.
Yeah, no,
Crumb is super not woke,
it ain't woke.
But in his sense of like, it's that era and like that countercultural stuff. You would push a lot of buttons, like even like you know the N word hearts in the can.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like that's like a thing where you can. Okay, I think I know that there is an edge to this that is critical of it. But it's also of that language, so that's something to think about.
Yeah,
when you're watching it now,
time and place,
time and place.
So these are trigger warnings you're giving people.
I don't know if that's what I'm giving people. I mean,
what's
honestly,
happening right
what
here?
Is happening?
I don't know what's happening. He's like, first of all, you're gonna watch. It's gonna start, and you're gonna see a ceramic ass.
Yeah.
So if you can't handle that, you're gonna shut it off.
You should just shut it off.
In the beginning.
It is an adult movie.
It's definitely. There's a lot of theme. Oh, okay. I had forgotten this thing about Max actually like.
Taking the
molesting
pants
and like assaulting women,
yeah,
essentially, and like somehow when
Wait,
I saw
in
this
San
before,
Francisco,
yes,
I think so,
yeah,
or maybe back in Philly, actually.
No,
he was still
it was
a kid.
In the marina.
No, oh really?
Well, Max, wait, okay, let's
the pulling down the pants?
Yeah.
Well, there's more Asians in San Francisco, so right. It might be why he moved there. That could be one of
that
the
could be.
One of the answers. But I had completely blanked that out from my memory of this movie. Like, I'd even forgotten about, like, the ending with Charles. I just, my main memory from this, because I already know a lot about, I've seen a lot of Crumb's drawings. Mm-hmm. My main memory was just that, like, SRO situation with Max. I forgot about the bed of nails and the ribbon, but just like, I just remember, oh, it's really sad. His brother is like sitting in this really disheveled situation and his other brother is about to move to France.
And
like, live out this, like, you know, fantasy life.
Right. But.
But I forgot about the crime part of it.
Yeah. I mean, he talks about being in the marina and following this beautiful girl.
Was in the marina?
Okay, yeah. Okay. And then pulling her pants up. But I remember after, because I've always loved this documentary, and I moved to San Francisco in 97. I remember him being in the newspaper for doing something as well.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah, so it's after, repeated.
Yeah, even after this.
And just seeing how he is.
Wait, when you say for doing something like he, assaulting? He, or,
yeah.
Oh, okay, okay. Not, think, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Wasn't like an
Well, he's like clearly like some level of like OCD or something too. It's like his impulse control is bad. Like they were talking about him as a kid pushing. And this was confusing to me. He kept pushing the bathroom door open when someone was in the bathroom. And I wanted to say it was one of the sisters, but it might've been, I don't think it was the same name. They said the name of the girl. I don't think it was one of the same names as the sisters, but he just compulsively opened it and then had a seizure. So he's got this thing where like any kind of sexual he even talks about it.
Yes, he does.
He like if he's like wants to like, or is it Charles that says he wants to? He has no sexual feelings anymore. Charles says he's had it drugged out of him.
Right, but Maxon says that he can't have sex because he has seizures if once he gets has sex. So
yeah,
that's all fucked up.
Crumb Brothers.
One of my favorite scenes though is when Mom is finally on camera.
Oh yeah, Mom.
And they're having a good laugh, and she's got her little cigarette, and then and then Robert says something about castor oil, and she's like, "I never did that." And he's "Well, someone gave us enemas."
Oh God, yeah.
Because she's talking
the
about
enema thing. Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh my God, that scene is too." It's very short, but it's like you're like, "Oh my God."
Well, you see her even just like Charles says something that's clearly like kind of truthful and sort of about the way they grew up, and then she just like immediately just like negates it. And he's just like, all right, if you like, you're gaslighting yourself,
right?
Or something basically.
Yeah. Well, people, you know, horrible parents will rewrite history.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And every occasion they can. And Charles talks about narcissism, you know, as well.
Right.
You know, like narcissism coming from being wounded. Yeah. You know, it's a defense mechanism. So, like, you know, Mom won't probably tell the truth at some point.
There's a lot to. I know this is a very common term, but I feel like it does apply here. Unpack.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a blooming onion.
He's even talking about it now. Like, oh, right.
Yeah.
There's so much.
There is so much.
That's just implied, and not actually
and, you know, they didn't,
spelled out.
I kind of like that Zweigoff didn't shy away from showing R. Crumb in some unsatisfactory light. Like, you know, when he's talking to his ex-girlfriend in New York and he grabs her face and...
do you remember that camera starts to shake?
Yeah.
And then they don't even... He doesn't he's not. I'm not worried about my buddy Terry over there. Like, oh, he's, you know, just had a little balance issue.
They even talked to some, like, a Mother Jones editor.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Who takes him to task.
Yeah, kind of about these topics you're talking about, right?
And then, as well, the journalists in San Francisco, it looks like they're sitting in Zuni Cafe.
Oh, yeah, yeah, when she's like, I read Zap, and it terrified me because I thought that's what womanhood was going to be like or something like that.
And I actually think Crumb gave a pretty interesting answer to that, which was not everything's intended for children. You know, and like I wouldn't let my daughter
watch Goodfellas
because it's horrifying. She's gonna have nightmares. So you should keep some of that stuff away. And I think that I was like, oh, well, that's a good answer. Mm-hmm. Might have been canned from all the years of people saying.
Well, that's also there's a long history of people trying to like regulate comics. You know, there was the comics codes, like the decency, like the ratings codes they had for comics back in the day. Part of underground comics, the point of underground comics in a way was that it was like going to be like the sex, drugs, rock and roll version of comics.
Complete liberation.
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
So it is interesting that he clearly could, their family could get a bunch of stuff out of just watching Treasure Island.
Right.
So I don't know, or like Long John Silver.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, whatever you're going to imprint on, there's a lot of like just stuff that imprinted on them as kids that ends up being weird fetishes later, or like I shouldn't say weird fetishes. Maybe let's not put a judgment on fetishes. Right, they're just fetishes.
Like they, yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly.
This is when you cross a line.
Just for me, they seemed weird.
Yes, yeah.
That's all. So now it's about.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? That. Hey, if you want to swallow a ribbon, Wayne, you're allowed to swallow a ribbon in my house. You just have to make sure to shit it out at your house.
Well, I think he showed us how he would use it earlier. Do you have siblings, Wayne?
Yeah. Yeah.
And how where are you in the hierarchy of...
Well, it's a very complex situation because my dad died when we were young and she had four kids. I was the youngest. And then my mom remarried and had two others.
Right, right.
And even though they're step siblings... Mm-hmm.
They're your siblings.
They feel like full-on siblings.
I have the same situation.
You do, yeah.
A similar situation.
So you have six.
So there's six, but I was the youngest of the first four.
Got it.
Yeah.
And you grew up in the house with the younger two, or no?
Yeah,
all siblings. Yeah.
And we all have the same last name. Like when my mom remarried, we got our new adopted names and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. Got it.
So it was same last name. Okay. So it was like one big family.
Is there a pre-Fetterman name then?
Yes, there is a pre-Fetterman.
What's a pre-Fetterman name?
Well, it's nothing it's I not talk about, talk but about. I will over. I'll R. Crumb it while we're in the world of complete honesty.
Yeah.
The name on my birth certificate is Wayne Monchin, MONDSCHEIN.
Mm-hmm. Oh, German?
Yeah.
Exclusive. Drop, exclusive.
Yeah, that's what I was... Monchin. Yeah, and I remember, like, because...
Is Fetterman a funnier name for comedy?
I think it is.
Yeah.
Fetterman.
The rhythm.
Yeah.
Monchin.
Monchin, and that's hard to pronounce. Yeah. But it means, like, moonlight or moonshine.
That's cool.
So I'm basically I bring moonlight to the world.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
Sorry to.
That's why you work late at night on things. Are you the only artist in your family?
My brother is a film editor.
Oh,
Andrew. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he actually got nominated for a movie called The Sixth Sense.
Ooh,
heard of it?
Famous for editing.
That's amazing editing.
Yeah.
Is that I See Dead People?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you.
Does he live here in Los Angeles?
No, he's in New York.
Got it.
All New York based.
Mm-hmm. Fuck, man.
Yeah.
Did you get your start
in
Florida?
He was much more of an achiever than I was. I was like, because I was a year behind him,
mm-hmm.
but he was super smart, good athlete, and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times when I was like, oh, I had your brother Andrew last year, and I was like, well, just stop,
lower the bar.
I'm going to be a different kind of student.
Yeah.
I'm going to be talking a lot. Yeah. And, I'll be good. I'm a smart kid, but not like him.
So you're kind of like to a point you were youngest child, and then you were middle child.
Exactly.
So you had both experiences.
Yeah,
that'll fuck you up a little bit.
I mean, I guess I'm kind of like that too,
really?
Except I'm like 20 years older than my brother and sister.
Oh, wow.
But my dad's
so really not middle child.
We didn't grow up in the same
household. Were you the youngest of that?
I was the youngest in the initial two. Yeah,
so we have that in common.
My older sister.
So what's happening here, guys?
I was the youngest of four, and my dad married my stepmom who had two kids.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What age?
Brady Bunch style.
So I was the youngest, and then I. One was the stepdaughter was old, one older than me, one younger than me. Yeah, so it kind of moved me up as well.
Brady Bunch style.
Yeah.
They mixed in the ages, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did.
Well, a lot of comedians are youngest kids.
It seems
overwhelming.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some exceptions to it, but I think Seinfeld's older than his sister or something.
Right.
But
I think that, it makes sense.
It makes sense. Yeah. You're looking for some kind of your figure.
Yeah.
And also, here's another reason. I know this is a total side, and I know you want to close up this podcast, but is that I feel like when you're the youngest, you get your verbal skills are more elevated because you're surrounded by
and culture too. Your brothers and sisters are bringing
your
home
references
albums.
Are going to be there's already more in your comedy quiver that you can pull out.
Associate with older people. Actually, speaking of like,
what do you think about that theory?
No, I like it.
I think it makes sense. Also, like that was reminding me of like the way that everyone spoke kind of similarly. All the brothers have a similar
speech rhythm.
Different tenor of vocal, a different tenor
of voice.
How they
stretched out different
but
words.
The way everyone kind of had a monotone that would occasionally and they're all clearly really smart.
Yes.
But, yeah.
Well, we haven't.
Affectless.
We haven't gotten to the big splash, the big finale, the big twist, which is that Charles, at the end.
Are we going
to
say this?
shouldn't we?
Yeah, people have seen it.
Yeah.
The way this show works, people.
We assume people have seen it.
Look, I'd seen this movie years ago. I forgot about this fact. Yeah. I knew that something, I remember there being a twist.
So here, Charles gets married at the end. He leaves the house.
He has sex once. It's amazing.
It's and gets a kid from that.
He doesn't have his teeth in his wedding photo. It's very strange.
Art Crumb illustrates him having sex for the first time.
The kid just graduated Stanford.
They're doing great.
She is great.
Amy. It's Amy Crumb.
Amy, she's in marketing.
She's gonna be on Girls.
Yeah,
if you're the granddaughter of someone famous,
yeah,
you get on
she's
Girls.
Doing super yeah. well. Well, now I don't know what to do. Should we not say it? Or just,
I would not say.
Okay, we're not gonna say it.
I would not.
Here's what I'd like to say,
especially if people have not seen it.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Watch it, and when you get there, this is what I want to say to our listeners. Two things. One,
hashtag fuck you, Paco. When you see that,
one is if there's any corrections you want to make because of our Fetterman ban, which is what we're gonna call it on technology, go to our Facebook page and tell us what we got wrong. Man. Two,
it's gonna be a lot.
Watch it, and then let us know what you thought on our Facebook page.
Yeah,
SupDog Podcast.
Should we leave on a little bit of Cheap Suit Serenades?
We should.
Yeah. Well, we'll drop that in.
And then we're going to do some Patreon posts.
Yeah, and then we'll do some other stuff.
Yeah.
Wayne Fetterman.
This has been very enjoyable.
This has
Thank
been
you
great.
For coming
Thanks,
to
Wayne.
The house. Thank
All
you
right,
so
cool.
much.
Awesome. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for listening.
You can find more episodes of SupDoc, show notes, updates, and more at supdocpodcast.com.
We're also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at supdocpodcast.
And you can also email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com if you have show notes, corrections, or if you want to hear us talk about a specific documentary.
We also appreciate anyone who can donate to our Patreon. Check out patreon.com/supdocpodcast.
And if you can't donate financially, please just like and subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you find podcasts.
Thanks also to Documentary News for their ongoing support of the show.
Yeah, and the show is produced by Will Scovel.
Our theme music is by David Siegel.